Now may the words of my mouth and the meditation of all our hearts be now and always acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Do please be seated. In the little poem Contrasts that I read earlier, I drew a contrast between the gods and goddesses of classical antiquity, those lofty Olympians that were worshipped across the Roman Empire in the days of Caesar Augustus, in the days when Jesus was born. And I contrasted the lofty pride of the Olympian gods with the humility of the true God, who came down rather than soaring up. I want to take that idea of contrasts and just in these few words bring it even a little bit more down to earth and not talk about the gods of antiquity, but a little bit about a contrast between the ruler who is named in the Christmas story and the Prince of Peace who is born in the Christmas story. In those days, a decree went out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed, we heard in that reading there. Other translations put it slightly more gently, that all the world should be enrolled, that all the world should be registered. But, of course, they were being enrolled and registered for one single purpose, which was indeed to be taxed. A census certainly did take place at about that time, and you can understand why a great ruler or emperor should want to hold a census. Naturally, you want to know a little bit about the people whom you rule. Though, unlike our own modern census, I don't think this census asked any questions about local customs, about faith, about what moved people, about what there was in their hearts. I think it was more a census about how many acres they had and how much could be expected to be got from them. So Caesar decrees from afar that we will up sticks and move at his convenience while he stays still in the center. And he does so in order that he may exact something from us. He is enrolling the world in order to take from the margins and enrich the center in Rome. That is the meaning of empire. Now, meanwhile, even as this decree is given out, another king, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, he also wants all the world to be enrolled. Now, why would that be? God scarcely needs any box ticking or form filling to be done in order to have knowledge of us. He doesn't need to send out his angels to organize a massive headcount of the cosmos. He knows all things. But he knows all things as God. His knowledge is, in that sense, always the knowledge of the great Creator looking down upon creation. It's not the knowledge, the inside knowledge of hearts that hurt. It's not the knowledge of what it is to be deprived or to be in the dark or to be anxious. You can have an outside knowledge. It's one thing to know something from an outside perspective, another from the inside. You might say it's one thing to write Hamlet. It's quite another thing to be Hamlet. Caesar stayed in the center and sent the rest of us on journeys. But in this great story of how we have come to be enrolled, to be registered, God himself sets out on a journey. And when he was born in Bethlehem, when he was counted and registered by Caesar, he was really, I believe, coming to find and to count and to register all of us, to connect with our humanity and to know us, not because we'd filled some outer form for him, but because he had indeed taken upon himself our very form. Jesus came not to register in the sense of an outer register, but I believe that God became human so that he could register within himself every pain and hurt, every joy, all the shocks of what happens to us, the 1,000 natural shocks that flesh is heir to, and which can only be felt in the flesh. Caesar registered from the outside to exact. Jesus registers in his own heart all that our hearts are open to and record. And he did so in order to share and to give, to share our pain, to give his joys. Now, when those registers and enrollments and tax forms were finally filled in the city of David, by Joseph, no doubt, putting down what little they had in his trade as a carpenter, and by countless other Josephs all over not only Judea, but the whole of the Roman Empire, the efficient Roman administrative system and the proper straight Roman roads, even extending out to places like this, eventually were filled with the messengers and message bearers, and those registers, the lists of names, were all, I suppose, in the end, taken back to Rome. But when Jesus has come in the flesh to register in his heart the heart of what it is and the hurt of what it is to be human, he doesn't then send off some outward paper knowledge. But he takes that register of the depth and heart of being human with him up into heaven. What is lifted up to heaven by Jesus is the heart of who we are. And we are indeed registered there. We are enrolled, all of us, in heaven. And more than that, unlike the names on the long list in the palace of Caesar, or on the names that are doubtless on the computers kept on us by the government and by our own inland revenue, unlike those sequence of easily manipulated digits, in that register, in the Lamb's Book of Life, as another part of the Bible calls it, where we are enrolled in heaven, we're not just names. We are personally known and loved and cared for. Jesus, who died for us and who rose for us, promises, as he grows to a man from this Christmas day, to reserve, to keep, to prepare a place for us there in heaven. He wants us to keep his birthday on earth so that he can keep our birthday with us in heaven when we are born into that realm with him. He wants us to watch with him, even from this Christmas day, as far as his Good Friday and beyond. Because we will find when we do that, that he watches with us, that he walks with us, that he supports us all through our darkness, through our pain, through our Good Friday, so that one day, because of this Christmas, there'll be an Easter for all of us. The contrasts between Caesar and Jesus couldn't be clearer. But I want to finish with a short parable or anecdote, also one of contrasts told by Martin Luther. I put in my poem earlier that lofty pride aspires to rise. And it's easy for the church to contrast humility in the grace of Christianity with the pride and vanity of the world. But actually, historically, some of the worst pride and vanity aspiring to rise has actually been in the church and by Christians. Here's a story that Martin Luther told. There was once a man who desired to be the most pious and virtuous man in the world. And he had heard that there was a ladder, a scale of perfection, and that by being extra good each day, you could climb on it rung by rung and eventually get to heaven. And he wanted to be up in heaven with all the brightness and light of God. So every day, rung by rung, he climbed. And he became more and more good and virtuous, and was particularly pleased to be able to look down from his lofty position on the ladder at those who hadn't quite managed to get as high as he had in the spirituality stakes. And eventually, by huge effort, gargantuanly, one day he actually managed to thrust his head through the floor of heaven and look around him after a lifetime's effort. And he was deeply disappointed. Heaven was cold and dark because on that very day, God was lying in a manger on earth.